Mike Johnson, the Republican Speaker of the House, is busy these days. Yesterday, he went to Columbia University, calling on the president to resign as student protests against Israel's war with Hamas in Gaza continues. Here he is speaking on campus.
My message to the students inside the encampment is go back to class and stop the nonsense.
Now, back in Washington, he celebrated a foreign aid bill for Ukraine, Israel, and other countries that he helped to salvage. It had been held up for months by members of his far right. But Johnson pushed it through, and this week, President Biden signed it. For some perspective on the House Speaker, let's bring in Princeton historian Julian Zelizer. Julian, welcome back.
Thanks for having me. Nice to be back with you.
So first, his trip to Columbia University. I mean, surely this Republican speaker knew he would be jeered and booed at this liberal Manhattan campus. He says the university president is failing to dismantle the encampment's his point of view. What was Johnson trying to do, you think, with this visit?
Well, look, it's fair to say maybe he genuinely cares about the issue and is worried about it. But politically, I think Republicans see an opportunity to try to present themselves as the party of order and institutions they deem as liberal disorder. And I think we'll hear more of this from the GOP, as we've already heard in the hearings for months to come.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's talk about Johnson's legislative maneuvering and leadership in getting this foreign military aid bill through the House. A couple, as we know, far-right members of his caucus threatened to try to remove him if he pushed for the Ukraine aid bill. In the end, Mike Johnson separated each bill for Israel, for Taiwan, for Ukraine. Individually, they all passed, and then he stitched them together before final passage. What do you make of his work as a legislator?
Well, for the time being, he survived, and he was able to get this package. I think, given the circumstances, that was notable. It's unclear how long this can go. It's not clear to me that he could keep working with Democrats and retain the support of most Republicans. But this was a test. You know, Congresswoman Green was threatening him. He, you know, saw if it's a bluff. And thus far, more Republicans have sided with him than her, and his speakership survives.
Yeah. And as you're saying, he has his job. He keeps his job for now. We know there's a pretty long list of Republican speakers with the word former in front of that who haven't been in, who didn't last too long in the job. Gingrich, Livingston, Boehner, Ryan, McCarthy. Why is it so hard for Republican leaders to stay in this job compared to their counterparts on the Democratic side of the aisle?
A part of it's the culture of Republican politics. I think the caucus is just less willing to tolerate leaders who veer away from what the rank and file want. And that's been combined with the rules change when Speaker then McCarthy was elected, which made it possible for just one Republican to call for a motion to vacate. And you put those two together, you have a party that's just more willing to do this than you see on the Democratic side of the aisle.
Yeah. So then what does this mean for lawmaking, governing, for the people who are watching what Congress is doing or not doing?
It's not ideal. Look, we have very strong and intense partisanship on Capitol Hill. We know that. But one of the things strong leaders bring to the table is they could shape and direct what their parties do. They could lean in on their parties and try to help move them to resolve at least the most pressing issues. And if you have one party that in the end doesn't do that, it's just going to create more dysfunction and gridlock.
Yeah. You know, Julian, when I covered Capitol Hill more closely in the 90s, and it was Democrats who struggled to get together then on legislation. I mean, is it simply a reality on both sides of the aisle that if you have a narrow majority, it can just be so hard to pass anything?
That is true. And so narrow majorities inevitably create this kind of politics. But again, the idea that you'll easily remove a speaker, maybe over one vote, that's different than we've seen. Even Speaker Pelosi, after 2018, who also had narrow majorities, she mm-hmm. didn't really face that threat. And so it's narrow majorities plus. And the plus, I think, is what's making things so unstable right now.
Yeah. And finally, the question to you, the historian, can you think of leaders in the past from either party who managed well with narrow margins?
Her. I think Pelosi did it very well. She was effective. She kept her opponents in the tent. People like AOC did not ultimately bolt. She was very disciplined and was able to move legislation through. So she's kind of an example of why narrow majorities don't inevitably mean gridlock.
We've been talking to Princeton historian Julian Zellers, or Julian, we know you're fighting a cold. Thanks so much for taking the time. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.